Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
I am delighted and honored to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Mairead McGuire, a recipient of the 1976 Nobel Peace Prize, together with Betty Williams for their work in Northern Ireland. And she, as it happens, did not give a pro-war acceptance speech on that occasion, unlike someone we all know. Mairead McGuire is a founder of the Nobel Women's Initiative, and she has been working for peace around the world for decades, and is just returned from Syria. Mairead McGuire, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you very much indeed.
Tell us, please, about your trip to Syria. What sort of a trip was it? Who invited you? Who did you go with?
Well, in Belfast here, we received a visit from Mother Agnes Miriam, who herself was living in Syria. She ran there an orphanage for Christian and Muslim children. And she, over 2.5 years ago, when she came out to the surrounding area of her orphanage, she discovered that many bodies, people had been killed, over 100, in a very brutal way. And when they began to inquire what was happening, they found out that foreign fighters were in their area and were killing people. So Mother Agnes left Syria to come to Europe and subsequently visited us in Ireland. And she was the first voice to come out of Syria to explain that there were a lot of foreign fighters inside Syria and that they're carrying out the most awful atrocities. So she came to Belfast, to our little peace centre, on behalf of the Patriarch of Syria and behalf of the organisation which is working with in Syria called Musalaha. It's a peace and reconciliation movement. And she asked us to bring to Syria an international delegation to see for ourselves what was happening within the country. So in response to that request, the peace people in Belfast and myself, we organised a delegation of 16 people from 8 countries. And from the 1st to the 11th of May, our delegation visited both Lebanon and Syria.
And these foreign fighters, are these on the side of the rebels, the opposition, and where... What foreign nations were they from?
Well, when we went into Lebanon, first we spent 4 days there, and we visited all the religious leaders and political leaders, and we also visited the refugee camp. And one of the first testimonies we had from people inside the refugee camp, Palestinian refugee camp, and they were receiving over 7,000 Palestinian Syrian refugees, though they themselves had nothing in Beirut. They were living on very little. But we asked one of the families. This was a man and his wife. He was an engineer and she was she herself was a pharmacist. And they were in this refugee camp literally with nothing, and we asked them why they had fled their home. And he explained to us that they had came from homes in Syria, that many foreign fighters had come to homes, taken over their area, killed young males, refused to join their ranks, and taken over their homes. And they had fled and into Syria, into Beirut, for safety, and were then in that refugee camp. They explained to us that these foreign fighters had come from many countries like Libya, Saudi. They were Chechens, Afghanis, Pakistanis, and that they were well-armed, well-equipped, financed, and well-trained by outside government. So that was the first indication that we had inside this Beirut refugee camp, that there was something more than what we were hearing on Western media that was going on inside Syria. So when we subsequently went to Syria and in Damascus, we spent 4 days there, Again, we heard from witnesses that foreign fighters were operating within the country. Now, it's a deeply complex situation. And when this trouble started over 2.5, almost 3 years now, it was people coming out for calling for change. They were coming out for asking for human rights and more democracy because they were living under a dictatorship. But tragically, what happened, according to the stories and testimonies we took, that this movement for democracy, for change, for a change in their country, was taken over by armed gunmen. And then violence broke out, and then the government responded with violence as well, and the whole situation began to get out of control.
And you met on this trip with representatives of the opposition and of the government. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true. We met when we went in. We are pro-peace and for support for anyone who would be working for a peaceful solution within Syria. So we wanted to meet people from right across the board, and that is what we did. We went to the hospitals, we went to the refugee camps within Syria. There are 4 million people displaced within Syria, so this is a particularly shocking humanitarian crisis as well, and over 9,000 people have been killed. And we wanted to hear from everyone within that situation. Now, when we went, we met with representatives of the opposition, and at an open forum with representatives from over 20 different internal opposition groups. And we met with people who had taken up arms in opposition to the government. And it was very interesting that they said to us, some of the people whom we met, they said that they didn't support the regime, but they believed that their country was in danger of being destroyed by outside forces. So they wanted to work towards change, towards reconciliation and peace themselves within their country to move for political change. But they didn't want outside interference. And this was the message we continually got from those who opposed the Assad regime and those who supported the Assad regime, saying that there should be no outside interference in our country. We can solve these problems ourselves. One particular opponent told us that he had been in prison for 24 years under the Assad regime. He had been out of prison then for 11 years, and he insisted he wanted political change, but without outside interference and the use of violence in their country. And this was a consistent message that we got from people who said they opposed the regime. Now, we also met with members of the regime. We met with the we were invited to speak at the parliament. We met with the governor, the prime minister, and ministers from 7 other ministries. They told us that the government had been slow to change, that they had made mistakes, but that they had now moved towards making changes in the constitution, and political reforms were being put in place. And there were plans for election in 2014, and they invited the international community to send delegations to see that these elections would be held fairly. They said they admitted they'd been slow to respond to legitimate demands for change from civil society, but that they were now working to implement those changes. So they told us that the conflict started. It was peaceful at first by people asking for changes, but that it turned into bloodshed when armed men began to kill soldiers. And they said that in the first day, soldiers were unarmed, but when people started asking for protection, the government and military responded to defend the people. So we questioned them on the fact that the government was shelling certain areas and abusing human rights and international law, and that we challenged this abuse of human rights and international law by the government. And their response was that they were trying to clear areas of rebel forces. They were trying to clear the areas of the rebel forces that were operating within those areas. But we were adamant that we didn't support any kind of violence, and this was an abuse of the governed by of the people's right for protection.
And if the United States begins to arm the opposition in Syria, or to take part itself, or to bomb in the so-called creation of a no-fly zone, what do you think will be the impact, short and long term, for the people of Syria? This is something that the people of the United States are overwhelmingly opposed to, but that the U.S. government appears to be moving forward with.
Well, I think that that would be a tremendous tragedy, because it will really add fuel to the already fire that is raging in the Middle East at the moment. I mean, the fact that these jihadists, we were informed the jihadists are from something like 28 different countries, and the figure put on it is 50,000 jihadists. They're fundamentalists, they're extremes, they're connected to Al-Qaeda. They have an agenda for Syria that is not based on human rights. I mean, when we were in, and these are the people that are already being funded by outside governments, trained and funded and well-equipped. When we were in the hospital, we met one man. He was a Muslim imam, and he said to us, "I opposed these jihadists in my community." He said, "They abducted me. They cut off my ear. They tried to cut my throat. They cut my body. They left me for dead." He said, "These are fundamentalist extremists who don't have the best interests of Syria at heart." And he said, "But they're being funded by outside governments like Qatar, like Saudi Arabia, and America and Britain are already helping these groups." So we have already got what is, it's not a civil war. It is a war that is being supported and by outside forces. And it will destabilize and destroy Syria if it is not stopped, and if support is not given to the peace and reconciliation movements within Syria.
We're speaking with May Reed McGuire, Nobel Peace Prize laureate and recently returned from Syria. May Reed, in the United States, we have a lot of people who oppose military intervention in Syria because they don't want to be that generous with U.S. money and U.S. lives and don't think Syrians are worth the trouble. And we have people who want to bomb Syria for the good of the Syrians because we care about people around the world. And when we say, no, we should not bomb them and we should not arm one side of the war, the immediate question is, well, then what should we do instead? So I put that question to you. What can people do that would be helpful?
Well, when we were in the mosque in Damascus, and Damascus is the heart of Christian and Muslim civilization. We all know St. Paul and the road to Damascus. I mean, it is where, from Christianity, the message has always come out of peace. And the Grand Mufti of Syria and the Patriarch of Syria and all the religious leaders were at a huge gathering of peace and reconciliation. And the message from the Patriarch and the Grand Mufti was, we send out to the world a message of peace from the Muslims and the Christian people. We have a peace process that is going on here through groups like the different religious leaders, the Musalaha, Peace and Reconciliation, all across Syria. And we ask you to support the peace process that the Syrian people themselves are building. We say there should be no outside intervention from any countries, no arming or sending in of soldiers or foreign fighters, which is destabilizing our country. Support the peace process. Lift the economic sanctions that are being put on by the West to force a regime change here within Syria because it is hurting the Syrian people, and support the dialogue and reconciliation amongst all those people, Syrian people, who want to see a non-violent solution. So I think the message is clear from within Syria, both religious and the political leaders, that they want to solve this problem themselves. Now, we hear a lot about the President Assad, but it is a fact that within Syria, 70% of the Syrian people support President Assad. And even when we were in Damascus driving through the city, we saw all these portraits of President Assad, and there were people saying, "We support Assad." There were people, young people, who said to us, "We don't support Assad because we want real changes in our country, and his party's not bringing them. But what we do want is we want to move towards elections when we, the Syrian people, can choose both our leader and our political representatives. And we want the right to self-determination, to choose our own way forward." And I think that's a message coming out of the heart of Syria. Let us choose our own political leaders and our own way forward. And you know, we have to remember, too, in Syria, there are geopolitical politics at work. Syria has oil. Lebanon has oil. Syria was twice bombed by Israel while we were in Syria. Israel controls the Golan Heights, which is originally Syrian land. Israel continues through its policies to deny the right to self-determination for the Palestinian people. So the whole situation in the Middle East really is wider than just Syria. It is the need for the American government and the European government and the UN to recognize that they have to deal with the whole question of the right to of the Palestinian people, because it is, if you like, causing a great deal of pain and anger in the whole Arab world, because the Arab world is aware that the Palestinian people for over 60 years have never had their basic rights, and Syria has always supported, as has President Assad, the right of the Palestinian people to have their rights.
It's remarkable to me the extent to which Western governments and media get excited about building support for any movement that's violent, whereas there appear to be opportunities, if we were looking for them, to support nonviolent pro-democracy movements all over that region, in Bahrain or Egypt or Turkey, and yet we don't hear this moral outcry for aid and intervention in those countries. Is there a problem of putting the focus in the wrong places in the Middle East?
Well, I think it's very important that we look at nonviolent solutions, and we support people within Syria and other countries who are working for a nonviolent solution. I've visited Palestine a lot and been inspired by the nonviolent movement within Palestine. So there are movements there that can be supported and should be supported. In Northern Ireland, when we came out in the mid-70s, we said there won't be a military or a paramilitary solution. We have to do it non-violently. And people supported us in that, including the American government, the British government, and the government in the Republic of Ireland. And yet here, when it comes to the Middle East, they're going the complete opposite direction when it comes in trying to find solutions. Now, I think it is imperative that non-violent solutions be found, because if you think of what happens if we continue down the road of arming fundamentalist extremist groups, then the people will continue to flee Syria into the surrounding countries like Lebanon, like Jordan, And these countries will be completely destabilized because they can't contain the numbers of refugees. They're small countries. They don't have the money. They don't have the infrastructure to be able to deal with over 1.5 million people fleeing from Syria and increasing. Also, too, what will happen is, and this is what the Patriarch said very clearly to us, the Middle East, Syria, Damascus, it's the heart of Christianity. It's the heart of the Muslim world. If people start fleeing Syria into surrounding countries, then the Middle East will become destabilized. The Christians will no longer be in the Middle East. Can you just imagine that? And moderate Muslims will also be flee, and extremists will take over Syria, which is a secular country. And that will be that tremendous gift to the world from Syria, of a secular, multicultural, multi-religious Syria, which was a light of peace to the in the middle of the Arab world. I mean, we could be in danger of losing that. So there is really tremendous challenge to all of us to deal with this issue in a way that is peaceful and not letting violence just blow out of all proportion, because we'll never get the lid back on it if this is allowed to happen.
There are similarities in what you're describing to what the West has done to Iraq in recent years as well. And it seems that the stories about attacks on Christians in Syria and danger and threats to Christians in Syria are waking up some opposition in the United States, which is, of course, largely a Christian nation. Yet it's difficult for me to talk about the dangers to Christians as if that justifies resistance to war, whereas dangers to non-Christians are not worth worrying about so much, which is a problem in the U.S. media. How should we be talking about the threat to humans and the victims that already exist in Syria?
Well, you know, inside Syria, it's a secular country, and it's multi-religious and multicultural. And though they lived under the regime, things were changing very much. But the different minority groups had certain rights and certain freedoms, as indeed had women inside Syria. So to portray it as a civil war, it's not a civil war. It's a proxy war. From outside forces are trying to destabilize Syria for their own purposes. So it is not a war between the Christians and the Muslims. And inside Syria, people love Syria, and Syria comes first. And they live together, they work together. Unfortunately, what is in danger of happening is when violence comes into force, then people then begin to separate and talk in terms of different religions. I think we have to just point to the fact that violence has to stop from all quarters, and outside forces should not be meddling with inside Syrian affairs, because Syria can solve her own problem. It has its parliament, it has its elected representatives, it has its president. They have a right to self-determination and through a democratic process to bring about change and reform, and no one would not argue that Syria needs reform. But the Syrian people are the people to do that, not people from outside. Now, unfortunately, the West has this arrogance of believing that it can bring democracy to these countries, and it has a right to go in and interfere in these countries. And that has to be challenged. I mean, I was in Iraq before the Iraqi war took place, and we knew inside Iraq the people were suffering because of economic sanctions put on. Children were dying because of sanctions put on by the West. And also we knew there were no nuclear weapons inside Iraq because UNSCOM had done the job and removed them. And Iraq was no threat to anybody outside its own borders. And yet we had NATO and the West going in and carrying out war crimes against the Iraqi people. And Iraq is now such a country under such terrible conflict. We've seen the same scenario in Libya, where Gaddafi was murdered, and Libya now is facing into such a lot of pain and conflict. I think it behoves us now to say no more Western intervention and domination. And for the like of the UK government and the French government and the American government to talk about arming jihadists who will then take these arms and murder people inside Syria, it is absolutely criminal. So we have to say there is an alternative to solving the problem of Syria, and it is non-violent dialogue, reconciliation. It is not war. War has had its day. It doesn't work. And it's time the West and NATO realize this. And NATO should be disbanded. NATO is a military war machine, which also has had its day. So we just need to begin to look at how we solve these problems without killing each other and allowing our government, so-called civilized Western government, to destroy other people's countries for the resources, for power, and for control.
It's very well said. We have about a minute left. I just want to ask how you respond to the notion that if the West claims that the Syrian government used chemical weapons, that changes everything.
Well, you see, we were told that Iraq had chemical weapons and they went to war and destroyed killed so many people on that pretense. It was a lie when Iraq didn't have weapons. We met with the Prime Minister of Syria for 2 hours when we were in Damascus, and we asked him, had the Syrian government used chemical weapons against its own people? And the Prime Minister said, no, they had not. Now, Syria, the Grand Mufti, the Syrian government, I was in Geneva 2 weeks ago, and they wrote to the UN Human Rights Commission and invited them to come into Syria and to see for themselves what's happening in Syria. And that the UN Human Rights Commission will, of course, be doing that. So I believe, again, we're being fed another war lie, and we must not fall for it on this occasion.
Or any other. Very well said. We've been speaking with Mairead McGuire, a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, one such laureate who actually works for peace. It's been an honor to have you on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you very much.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.